The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is the National Intel Report. I'm your host, John Stattmiller, with you on this Wednesday, 9/19/12 is the date. Peter Neese will be joining us next hour on the National Intel Report. And this hour, this is a piece that I wanted to do around September 11th, seeing how we had our 11th anniversary of the heinous attacks in the World Trade Center in New York, which led to, well, the erosion and the setting up of basically, because we're against terrorists and they're infiltrating everywhere, we have to take extraordinary measures and stripping people of their rights, because you see this constitutional due process stuff just gets in the way of really doing a thorough investigation of anything. So, you know, they hated us because of our freedoms. Well, we know that George Bush promptly threw those out the window with the baby in the bathwater. The founders used to refer to that as light and transient reasons, probably more in the category of transient than light. September 11, 2001 was not light, ladies and gentlemen. But at any rate, I want to go into this that I wanted to do the other day, and I'm going to do this in its entirety. I did the piece, what was that, yesterday? What's today? Wednesday? I did the piece Monday on the real reason why we're in the Middle East. Bretton Woods Agreement, shoring up the U.S. dollar with oil. Folks, we got plenty of oil here in the United States, off our coast. We've got oil fields. We've got the Bakken oil fields. We've got Prudhoe Bay up there. We've got Gull Island, untapped wells sitting there with untold, well, there's an estimate, huge fields of oil and natural gas just sitting there dormant. See, we got to keep the focus and the emphasis on the Middle East because we're over there routing out terrorists. Now, basically what we're doing is smashing the Middle East and its states to remake them in whose image? Certainly not theirs. So this is why I've not been getting into all the, oh, well, this is what happened in Syria today, because this is all the dog and pony show. This is all the political drama that's going on. I like to hack to the root of the problem, get to it, because the branches, they get in my way, and it makes it hard to see. I just go to the root of it and forget the drama. That's for the unwashed masses out there. That's for your infotainment, at any rate. By the way, folks, pledge drive going on. We're here today. We're here day in and day out, folks, giving you the cutting edge information, stuff that you will not hear on mainstream. And as always, we always have told you, don't take our words for anything. You know, this is where we got into the problem with the mainstream. Oh, it must be true because NBC told me. I don't want you to believe a word that I tell you. Take notes and check it out for yourself. That way you'll come around faster when you figure out, hey, this is a straight-up guy trying to tell us what's really going on.
Hey, meat eaters. The freeze-dry guy wants to know, does your emergency food supply meet the standards for survival? Then get the 144-day meat variety unit from the freeze-dry guy. Our meat units utilize only quality Mountain House freeze-dried cooked ground chicken and ground beef, the undisputed choice for great taste and highest nutrition. The freeze-dry guy's 144-day meat variety unit includes six number 10 cans of the very best freeze-dried animal protein for power you'll need when the going gets tough. Every Meat Eater's 144-day meat variety unit comes with a free medical kit and always free shipping to the lower 48. Need more than 144 days? See our one-year-plus Meat Eater's units at freezedryguy.com. And hey, the Freeze Dry Guy still has LRP rations, but they're going fast. Don't wait until tomorrow. Call now, 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-3663. Or go to freezedryguy.com and meet the standards for survival.
Are you prepared? Are you ready? You should be. CampingSurvival.com is your source for camping supplies, survival gear, and survival food. Whether you are an emergency preparedness-minded individual interested in MRE and colloidal silver, a hardcore hiker in need of paracord, a water filter system, and fire piston, or just need a basic first aid kit or emergency kit for the family, CampingSurvival.com is the right place. Call CampingSurvival.com today. Toll free 800-537-1339. CampingSurvival.com. It's not about the end of the world. It's not about surviving a hypothetical plane crash. It's about the satisfaction you get knowing you can take care of yourself and or your family in any situation, anytime, anywhere. Call now 800-537-1339.
Herbal Healer Academy's new summer specials. Our 500 parts per million colloidal silver, all sizes on sale. Organic liquid iodine, liquid cal, Meg, vitamin D, CoQ10 with hawthorn, colon enhancer, Super 2, natural laxative, our exceptional product, Connexin, memory power, and Super Male and Femplex. All on sale for the summer at herbalhealer.com. Also, 10% off on the HHA Survival Course. This is an important time to have this information. Might save your life. Nation's leader in supplying quality natural medicine and education. herbalhealer.com. Free online newsletter. Quality natural medicine supplier since 1988. We ship the same day you place your order. Free 128-page catalog with your first order. Go to herbalhealer.com today. herbalhealer.com.
Get ready for Real Talk Radio. You're listening to the National Intel Report with your host, John Stadtmiller.
Folks, the goal, the stated goal for the pledge drive is $40,000. We're in day two of it, and we are severely behind. And we might have to extend that ad nauseum day in and day out until you get tired of hearing it, and you'll just throw some money at us to shut us up. Okay, so that's the game plan. Hey, it is what it is. Yes, we are in the middle of a depression. We are well aware of that. You can call us at 800-724-2719. Folks, you're not going to hear information like I'm going to do here in a few minutes anywhere else. You can go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the PayPal button, or you can just simply mail a donation. Don't use credit cards. Don't like that stuff. Send us cash wrapped in foil. That's to keep the prying eyes of the postal workers. They would never steal anything from the private sector out there. No, never would do that. But just for the heck of it, just wrap it in some foil. When they hold the envelope up to a bright light, they won't see any money in there, is the point. At any rate, you can send a donation, money order, or cash, we don't care, to RBN 2251 Double Creek Drive, number 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. 9/11 in Zion. What was Israel's role? Nick Kollerstrom, with the help of Jim Fetzer, put this report together. And I wanted to do this closer to 9/11, but 9/11 happened September 11, 2001. It is forever in our history, but is the history correct? Well, we're going to give you some background. So the next time false flag terrorism happens in this country, the first thing you're going to do is look about 15 degrees up on the horizon to see what else is coming at you, because chances are it's going to be another concocted, nothing but a concoction of lies, a cacophony, if you will, of people that are really adept at twisting truth or omitting truth. Now, one may feel shocked by the title. Zionists have such a grip upon the guilt industry, virtually a monopoly, politically speaking, that is. Was 9/11 an inside job? Well, America was in some degree seated with the perpetration of this event from outside. And various echelons of its security services and military responded by cooperating and then weaving a Muslim did it story. There is the hypothesis we will here examine. So when Netanyahu said the very next day, after September 11th, this is a very good thing for Israel, he wasn't just blurting out something indiscreet. He was publicly congratulating the various agents who had worked so hard. The smooth integrity which the official story soon acquires is an expression of the nation's will to survive. And an event has taken place and been covered up, where the truth cannot come out without effectively disintegrating the nation in its present form. Ah, there's the rub. This is the sense of fun which the chief operators derive as they see all the media, who may not particularly like them, compelled to endorse and weave out their own accord the fabricated tale. Here are the seven pillars of the argument. Mr. Larry Silverstein and World Trade Center. The private property developer, billionaire Larry Silverstein, acquired the WTC complex off the New York Port Authority, founded and owned by a Rockefeller family, by the way, 2 months before 9/11. The first time in its 33-year history the complex had ever changed ownership. Silverstein was formerly a chairman of the United Jewish Appeal, the largest Zionist organization dedicated to raising money and support for Israel. Louis Eisenberg, former chairman of the New York Port Authority and the man who personally supervised the negotiations that delivered the 99-year lease to Silverstein, is also a former leader of the United Jewish Appeal. His first order of business as the new owner was to change the company responsible for the security of the complex. The new security company he hired was Securicom. That's been renamed Stratasec. George W. Bush's brother, Marvin Bush, was on its board of directors, and Marvin's cousin, Wirt Walker III, was its CEO. According to public records, not only did Securicom provide electronic security for the World Trade Center, it also covered Dulles International Airport and United Airlines, two key locations in the 9/11 attacks. Silverstein personally ordered World Trade Center 7 to be demolished or pulled in the afternoon of 9/11 and has never been cross-examined by any inquiry over this. His firm had built that very building in the mid-1980s. In 1980, Silverstein Associates won a bid to lease and develop that portion of the World Trade Center and to build the 47-story Building 7. This is the building the media does not want you to pay attention to. This was the building that fell in its own footprint, several small fires, but never struck by anything of the World Trade Center towers, either one or two. And never, ladies and gentlemen, in recorded history, and any engineer will tell you this, no steel-structured, girdered, built building has ever collapsed due to fire. But yet World Trade Center 7 fell, just like World Trade Center 1 and 2, in its very footprint, with nothing left. Despite being a mere leaseholder of the buildings, he was the sole beneficiary of the insurance payouts. He increased the insurance policies when he signed the lease 2 months before the catastrophe happened. The insurance was for $3.6 billion, but when he found an obscure clause in the insurance policy which enabled him to claim twice, one for each attack, Larry Silverstein, since July landlord of the towers, mind you, demands from the insurers $7.2 billion in compensation. His speaker, Steve Solomon, said with the help from New York's Jewish mayor, Michael Bloomberg, sorry, Mikey, He found investments to rebuild the World Trade Center. A good chunk of the $7 billion of the insurance went directly to Israel. So God once more helped out his chosen people financially. Ground Zero is being rebuilt by Daniel Libeskind, the Jewish architect of Berlin's Jewish Museum. The person said to be Silverstein's closest friend, one with whom he speaks almost daily by phone, is the former Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Well, for financial reasons, chiefly involving asbestos problems, the World Trade Center complex was no longer viable and needed to be demolished. But the cost of doing this legally were prohibitive. And just to expound on that, that was the insulation that was throughout World Trade Center Building 1 and 2, gobs of the stuff. And we know all about asbestos, lung cancer, so on and so forth. Couldn't have cleaned it out. They would have had to demolish the buildings. And so they did fall on September 11th. Due to an Arab attack, mind you. In the early 1990s, a group of leading U.S. Jewish businessmen formed a company that was to become the Israel Export Development Company as a way to make it easier for foreign investors to trade with Israel. It never quite worked out for various and complex reasons, despite the best efforts by Benjamin Netanyahu. But following that struggle gives us the impression of Silverstein as possibly the most distinguished U.S. financier assisting Israel. Thus, David Yerushalmi, who had led the IEDC effort since its inception, was asked to turn over the leadership of the company itself to Larry Silverstein, an accomplished real estate developer and ardent fundraiser for the Jewish Federation of New York, itself a big contributor to Israel. Now, perhaps, had it worked out, events would not have let the donation which he made to Israel following the insurance claim from the World Trade Center 7 collapse. Now, WTC 7 appeared as the only steel frame building in history for which fires was the sole cause of its collapse. Any building that was not owned by Silverstein Properties that day strangely remained upright despite being a lot closer to the two towers that collapsed onto them. Let me quote what Lucky Larry said on acquiring the leasehold. And I'm quoting him. He said, "This is a dream come true. We will be in control of a prized asset, and we will seek to develop its potential, raising it to new heights." Let's go to Rabbi and Zionist and citizen of Israel, Dov Zakheim. Mr. Zakheim and his missing trillions served as the comptroller of the Pentagon. That is, he was in charge of its finances from May 2001 to March 2004. While Bush was still governor of Texas, Zakheim became one of the closest advisors, counseling him on defense technology and strategic aspects of Middle Eastern affairs, and was Bush's senior foreign policy advisor during the 2000 campaign. Now, Dove had earlier held the position of Chief Executive Officer at Systems Planning Corporation, or SPC. Then he became the Undersecretary of Defense and Comptroller, head money man, again, of the Pentagon in May of 2001, appointed by Mr. Bush himself. He was sworn in as Undersecretary of Defense and Chief Financial Officer for the Department of Defense on May 4, 2001. Since then, over $3 trillion has gone unaccounted for. Gone, folks. Missing. $3 trillion. Now, Dov Zakheim's SPC offers the appropriately named flight termination system for remote control and flight termination of airborne test vehicles. It consists of a command transmitter system plus custom control interface and monitoring systems. The system can be configured to operate from a single local site or with several remote sites. It does sound rather useful, doesn't it? Especially when pilots of these heavy jet folks will tell you that these supposed box cutter hijackers that couldn't even master takeoff and landing had the ability to make complex maneuvers at high speed and hit their targets like needles in a haystack.
Are you struggling to reclaim your health? Let me share my story quick. My nightmare of chronic fatigue, PTSD, and autoimmune issues cost me everything. A bankruptcy, loss of home, even my wife walked out on me with no hope in sight. A miracle happened after hitting my lowest point. I discovered ion and RNA drops. It literally saved my life. I want to share my story with you and offer you a trial size mini bottle of RNA drops. Visit www.rnafreemini.com. Again, that's www.rnafreemini.com. It's time to take your power back now.
Free bottle offer involves processing and handling fees. Visit www.rnafreemini.com today.
Don't answer it! How can I stop these annoying collection calls?
Imagine being free from your debt without settling and with no payment plans, no negotiating or filing bankruptcy, and no attorneys. What if you could eliminate the risk from all your unsecured debt in about 90 days and keep all your money? You can. It's called Zero Debt Guarantee, and it works. There's no other program of its kind on the planet, and we guarantee the results in writing. Call now, 800-477-9256. Let our team of experts provide you with the resources to fight back, stop collection calls, and prevent and stop wage garnishments and bank levies. If you're facing foreclosure, we can help. Don't go it alone. Get free information now by calling 800-477-9256. Talk to an expert who has also completed our program. Call 800-477-9256 for free info or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com. That's 800-477-9256 or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com.
Allison C. is made from pure garlic through a patented process that stabilizes the actual Allison of 34 cloves of garlic in one tiny capsule. Allison only exists for a fraction of a second when you crush a clove of garlic. It is the most powerful, natural antibiotic known to man and has been proven in laboratory testing to kill bacteria, viruses, fungus, and parasites without upsetting the natural balance of healthy organisms in the body. Allison C also helps prevent disease when taken on a regular basis. You can purchase your Allison C through Paul Drockton's website, internettruth.org. Start enjoying the benefits of this all-natural supplement today. Go to internettruth.org for your supply.
And while I'm going through this, pay attention, ladies and gentlemen, of the tale that's being told and the weaving in of all the players and all the actions taken subsequent to 9/11/2001. Systems Planning Corporation, of which he had been corporate vice president, and now we're speaking of Dove Zakheim, is a high-tech security research and manufacturing firm based in Arlington, Virginia, a major player in the homeland security industry and a leading designer of airborne remote-controlled technology. It makes the command transmitter system, a remote control system for planes, boats, missiles, and other vehicles, which can be configured to interface with all sorts of vehicle types. He is chief executive officer of SPC, International Corporation, a subsidiary of SPC, that specializes in political, military, and economic consulting. A subsidiary of this firm, Tri-Data Corporation, oversaw the investigation of the first terrorist attack on the World Trade Center back in 1993, which would have provided vital first-hand knowledge of the security systems and structural blueprints of the World Trade Center. Now, Zakheim has close ties to the Israeli government, holding dual Israeli-American citizenship, as a member of the Council on Foreign Relations and founding member of the neocon cult, he co-authored the Heritage Foundation's infamous tract, Rebuilding America's Defenses, Strategy, Forces, and Resources for a New Century, published by the American Enterprises Project for a New American Century, PNAC, in which the Bush administration entire design for renew global conquest was laid out, exactly a year prior to 9/11. It called for some catastrophic and catalyzing event, like a new Pearl Harbor, as necessary to foster the frame of mind needed for the American public to support a war in the Middle East. As a respected and established voice in the intelligence community, his views were eagerly accepted. In 2004, an article entitled "The Mastermind Behind 9/11" on the Truth Seeker website expressed the view that, considering his access to Boeing 767 tankers remotely controlled flight system, and his published views in the Project for a New American Century document, it seems very likely that he is in fact a key figure in the alleged terrorist attack in New York City on September 11, 2001. Rabbi Zakheim had access to things like structural integrity, blueprints, and any number of important facets of information about World Trade Center through his work with Tri-Data Corporation in the investigation of the bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993. That he had access to remote control technology through his work at Systems Planning Corporation. That he had access to Boeing aircraft through a lease deal he brokered while working at the Pentagon. And finally, that he was part of a group of politically radical Straussian neoconservatives who, through their association with PNAC, called for the restructuring of the Middle East. In response, the Truth Seeker was threatened with prosecution by Zakheim's lawyers back in 2005 and had to remove the article. However, the insightful articles, Dov Zakheim and the 9/11 Conspiracy and also the Mastermind Behind 9/11, can still be viewed. Now, the planes that purportedly slammed into the towers that morning were supposed to be Boeing 767s, and Zakheim had contracted and sent a number of these Florida MacDill Air Force Base before the event. The flight termination system produced by SPC does somewhat resemble the object visible in photographs under the fuselage of Flight 175. Just prior to its impact into the South Tower, this plane is suspected to have been a KC-767, the military tanker version of the Boeing 767. As the Truth Seeker observed, the remote control technology whereby these specially prepared planes impacted the towers was probably made and managed by Zakheim's company. In addition, he had enabled substantial support for Israel over the years, thanks to him. Israel is awash in F-15s and F-16s, and the latest in offensive and defensive missile systems, sold to Israel at a fraction of their value. Zakheim had a central role in the perpetration of 9/11. If Dov Zakheim wants to sue me, well, let's have a complete public investigation, and if I'm wrong, I'll apologize. But I don't think that I am. The airline security company responsible for the shocking security lapses at both the Boston and Newark airports on 9/11 is wholly owned subsidiary of an Israeli company, ICTS, headed by men with clear ties to Israel's military intelligence agency, the Mossad. Huntley USA is a subsidiary of International Consultants on Targeted Security, headed by former Israeli military commanding officers and veterans of government intelligence and security agencies. It sells security, ticketing, check-in, and passenger screening services to Boston's Logan Airport and New Jersey's Newark Airport. Menachem Atzman, convicted in Israel in 1996 for campaign finance fraud, and his business partner, Ezra Harrell, took over management of security at the Boston and New York airports when their company, ICTS, bought Huntley USA in 1999. United Airlines Flight 175, and I think this is United Airlines Flight 11, which allegedly struck the Twin Towers, both originated in Boston, while United Airline Flight 93, which purportedly crashed in Pennsylvania, departed from the Newark Airport. More on this when we get back. Just a remembrance on the 11th anniversary of September 11th of 2001. Stuff you didn't know.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
If you're taking 1, 2, 5 or more nutritional supplements, please stop. Simplify your supplementation with Bio Superfood, the most advanced nutritional whole food supplement you can buy. Men, women, children, even Olympic athletes the world over have discovered Bio Superfood from BioAge.com and now take just one nutritional supplement instead of many. The Bio Superfood formulas are whole food products composed with 4 of the most nutrient-dense algae found on Earth. Bio Superfood for the brain helps with focus, memory, clarity, and mood. If you can increase brain health, the rest of the body is a no-brainer. Bio Superfood has zero toxicity and is safe for you and your family. Learn more and order your Bio Superfood formulas at BioAge.com, spelled BioAge.com, BioAge.com, or call 877-288-9116. That's 877-288-9116. BioAge, the age of advanced organics.
American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy 3 Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com includes detailed planting and seed saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
Meet Jerry D.
Hi.
Jerry and his family, like you, are very concerned about world conditions and have gathered many emergency preparedness items, including turtle tough shelters.
We have added 2 24-foot turtle toughs to our supplies and feel very secure knowing our large family is ready for whatever the future may bring.
Turtle tough shelters are not tents. They are permanent yet portable four-season geodesic frame shelters that are as strong as a cabin at a fraction of the cost, and are easy to set up, take down, and move anywhere. Available in 2 sizes. Get your Turtle Tough Shelter and accessories included at TurtleToughShelters.com. That's Turtle, T-U-F-F, Shelters.com. Or call 801-623-3288. That's 801-623-3288. Or see them online at TurtleToughShelters.com. Turtle Tough Shelters, your all-season home away from home.
You're tuned in to the National Intel Report, the Real Talk Radio Show.
Let me pick up with the mystery of 9/11/2001, which I was thinking earlier in the day. Geez, that report, the 9/11 Commission report, was, in my mind, as suspiciously as tainted as, well, the investigation into JFK. If you saw the personages there in that supposed investigative committee and the subsequent cover-up, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. As I was saying prior to the break, United Airlines Flight 175, which allegedly struck the Twin Towers, both originated in Boston, while United Airlines Flight 93, which purportedly crashed in Pennsylvania, departed from that Newark airport. Atzmon, and just happened, by the way, to be good friends of the current Israeli Prime Minister, Ehud Olmert. In fact, Atzmon is such a good friend of Olmert that he was involved in a financial scandal involving forged receipts for donations to the Likud campaign with Olmert back in 1997 when Atzmon was the co-treasurer of the Likud party. Does this go anywhere to explain how these Muslim hijackers could appear as getting on the planes with no closed-circuit television pictures of them anywhere in the airports, no Arab names on any flight lists, no boarding staff prepared to testify to having seen any Arab-looking guys mount the planes, nor any postmortems indicating any Arab bodies anywhere. That phantasm could be woven and sustained with the aid of Israeli intelligence agents handling security and passenger screening at just those very airports. The two Israeli-based companies, Amdocs and Comverse, have wiretapping technologies which tend to have a backdoor built into to overhear monitored conversations. In January of 2001, Comverse purchased a large stake in a company, pronounced Odigo, giving it access to Odigo's operations, accounting, and technologies. In 1999, the NSA issued a top-secret report on how U.S. phone records were getting into foreign, that is, Israeli hands concerning Israeli-linked drug crime mafia rings. A revealing four-part investigative series was aired by Fox News in December of 2001 by Carl Cameron. This outlined how the Israeli-controlled company, Amdocs, had installed new White House communication systems during the mid-1990s. This simulated FBI probes into extent of Israel's eavesdropping on calls to and from the White House, the NSC, Pentagon, and State Department. Clearly, Amdocs was spying on the White House. Cameron and Fox News were told, evidence linking these Israelis to 9/11 is classified. We cannot tell you about evidence that has been gathered. An Israeli government-run company called Zim Israel Navigational Commands, over 80 vessels, is the ninth largest shipping company in the world and had 200 employees in the North Tower. 1 week before 9/11, Zim moved out of the World Trade Center offices with over 200 workers, paying a $50,000 fine for breaking its lease. Its decision to move had been announced six months earlier. The reason given was to save on rent. Now, as the towers crumbled, five young Israelis, who turned out to be Mossad agents, were caught doing the happy dance while videotaping the event. Police ascertained that their van contained $4,700 in cash, plus box cutters, and some photographs showing their smiling faces in front of the smoldering wreckage, in reference to 9/11 towers, and one showing a hand flickering a lighter open in front of the towers. The van tested positive for explosives. There were maps of the city in the car with certain places highlighted. It looked like they're hooked into this. It looked like they knew what was going to happen. When the five returned to Israel, one of them brazenly explained on Israeli TV, "The fact of the matter is that we have been in a country that experiences terror daily. Our purpose was to document the event, showing that they knew what was going to happen." And here's the actual clip from the Israeli talk show in November of 2001.
Wearing my binoculars, and I could see the towers from my windows, and this is where I'm looking, and all of a sudden down there I see this van park, and I see three guys on top of the van, and I could see that they were like happy, you know, they didn't look shocked to me, you know, they didn't look shocked. I thought it was very strange.
Amazingly enough, we have found the moving company where the five Israelis worked.
Was this building being used as a front for some kind of Israeli intelligence operation that possibly was doing surveillance on the Arab American community? Were there men celebrating or slapping fives or whatever?
We had received an all points bulletin, and I just happened to see the van, and, you know, holler it over to my lieutenant. You know,
this
think
is Scott DiCarlo
could be the van. We checked
of
it out.
New Jersey Police Department.
It was. You know, we were all on edge, obviously, so I really wasn't looking to make friends with these people, and neither were the officers that I were with. Once we started talking to them, you know, they were pretty much like, hey, we're not against you, we're with you.
And here's the Israeli show.
And at that point, we were taken for another round of questioning, this time related to our allegedly being members of Mossad. The fact of the matter is, we are coming from a country that experiences terror daily. Our purpose was to document the event. Our purpose was to document the event.
The five Israelis were detained for 10 weeks and finally deported on immigration violations after the FBI cleared them of any involvement in 9/11.
Amazingly enough, ladies and gentlemen, there they were to document, with prior knowledge, of course, the 9/11 tragedy. They just happened to be there. They set up their cameras on banks of the Hudson River, trained them on the Twin Towers, and congratulated each other when the crashes occurred, according to the New York Times. And as you heard, a witness noted, they seemed to be taking a movie. They were like happy. You know, they didn't look shocked to me. I thought that was strange. The company they worked for, Urban Moving Systems, had few discernible assets. It closed up shop immediately afterwards, and its owner fled to Israel. In the weeks and months following 9/11, numerous cells of other Mossad moving agents were arrested across the nation. And then in December of 2001, Fox News reported that U.S. authorities had detained 60 such movers. Now, the revealing four-part investigative series was aired by Fox News in December of 2001, dealing with the arrest of several hundred Israeli nationals, as well as some of the incriminating circumstances surrounding their activities in the United States. In response, every major media outlet in America received a visit from Abram Foxman, the head of the Anti-Defamation League. A phrase he used was, "What are you doing putting this stuff out there? You're killing us." Executives at the highest levels of the various networks were inundated with phone calls, letters, and emails. Members of the most powerful Jewish groups in the country, the ADL, AIPAC, with its 60,000 members, and the misnamed Committee for Accuracy in the Middle East Reporting in America, or CAMRA, visited the White House and petitioned officials at the highest levels to close down investigations of the Israeli spies. At least 120 Israeli intelligence operatives entered America and posed as art students with door-to-door sales of artwork. Many of the ring's activities seemed to run parallel with the movements of several of the 9/11 hijackers. A group of about 140 Israeli spies were arrested, and the U.S. government documents alluded to this ring as having organized intelligence gathering operations designed to penetrate governmental facilities. The Fox News program revealed documents indicating that these art students had targeted and penetrated military bases. No mean achieved for the art students. Other reports speak of 200 Israeli spies being uncovered, among them military members, electronics experts, wiretapping, phone tapping specialists, and explosive experts with the skill to bring down tall buildings. They were arrested for trying to sneak into secured U.S. federal buildings and staking out 36 Department of Defense sites. Some of these suspicious art students showed up at the homes of federal employees. An investigative report concluded that a former Defense Department analysis, Hatchett believes groups may be gathering intelligence for possible future attacks. Some organization, thinking in terms of potential retaliation against the U.S. government, could be scouting out potential targets and looking for targets that would be vulnerable. Another federal memo stated that besides Houston and Dallas, the same thing has happened at sites in New York, Florida, and six other states, and even more worrisome at 36 sensitive Department of Defense sites. One defense site you can explain, says Hatchett. Well, that was just serendipitous. 36, that's a pattern. Between December 12th and the 15th of 2001, the FBI, the DEA, and the INS informed Fox News that there were no connections between the art students and the incidents of 9/11. Pay attention, this is merely 1 month after. Hundreds of art students, and they came to this conclusion that these art students, there were no connections. And that continuing to pursue this topic would be a form of career suicide. On December 16, 2001, Fox News pulled the information regarding the art student spying from its website. Jane's Intelligence Digest commented, it is rather strange that the U.S. media seems to be ignoring what may well be the most explosive story since the September 11th attacks, the alleged breakup of a major Israeli espionage operation in the USA. The Palm Beach Post alluded to the DEA report on the Israeli art students, saying it had determined that all of the students had recently served in the Israeli military, the majority in intelligence, electronic signal, intercept, and explosive ordnance units. The story of the largest spy ring ever discovered inside the United States was soon hushed up. Evidence linking these Israelis to 9/11 is classified. I cannot tell you about the evidence that has been gathered. It's classified information, explained a U.S. official on Cameron's Fox News report on the Israeli spy ring and its connections to 9/11. The Israel national Michael Chertoff would become the first head of the Department of Homeland Security, was responsible for letting them off and making sure they got safely back to Israel. The Florida Flight School president, Rudy Deckers, recalled of Mohammed Atta. "Well, when Atta was here and I saw his face on several occasions in the building, then I know they're regular students, and then I try to talk to them. It's kind of a PR. Where are you from? I tried to communicate with him. I found out from my people that he lived in Hamburg and spoke German. So one of these days I saw him. I speak German myself. I'm a Deutsch citizen. I started in the morning telling him in German, 'Good morning, how are you? How do you like your coffee? Are you happy here?' He looked at me with cold eyes, didn't react at all, and walked away. That was one of my first meetings that I had." Atta's German may not have been up to much, but he could speak Hebrew. Though Mohammed Atta of Florida loved eating pork chops and various different passports and IDs, according to his lingerie model and stripper girlfriend, Amanda Keller, and could speak Hebrew. She challenged him when he claimed later, and then by demonstrating his skill in Hebrew, he convinced her. He loved partying, strip clubs, fast cars, casinos, and snorting cocaine. Not quite the suicidal type, maybe. The real Mohammed Atta, who lived in Hamburg as an architecture student, had his passport stolen in 1999, which presumably enabled the identity theft to take place. Austere, silent, and devout, he avoided women and hated flying so much that his sister had to give him special medicine to enable him to do it. There could not be two more opposite characters. The Hamburg Atta was more than 3 inches shorter. One presumes he was killed after September 11th, after he spoke to his father on the 12th over the phone. The Florida Atta lived on the same street as one of the groups of the Israeli art students. The Israeli art student leader, Hanan Sarfati, had rented several dwellings in the neighborhood, and he stayed next door to the post office where Humphman aviation flight students had their mailboxes. Mohammed Atta's vital task on the morning of 9/11 has been well described by Roland Morgan, and it involved a journey to Portland in order to have his baggage, complete with Koran, so on and so forth, delivered to Boston Airport in such a way that it would be retained by the airport, not put on a plane. For this, there was no need for him to board one of the planes. Nearly 500 foreign nationals from over 80 different nations were killed in the World Trade Center. The next day, September 12th, the Jerusalem Post reported that Israel's embassy in America was bombarded on 9/11 with calls from over 4,000 worried Israeli families. On September 13th, four Israelis were almost certainly in the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center when they collapsed. The Israeli consul in New York said that this evening, this number dwindled. The tower specialized in international banking, so one might have expected a few more Israeli citizens. One or possibly three Israelis died on 9/11, one in the towers and two on the planes. There is very little of this on the web. 1 week later, President Bush stated that 130 had died, but 129 of these were found to be alive and well. The New York Times 22 September story found that three Israelis were confirmed dead, two from the planes and one from the towers. Of this total, the British historian David Irving wrote, We are happy to report that the 4,000 figure dwindled eventually to three. Not 3,000, but three. Then two, then one, the unfortunate Daniel Lewin. Two Mossad agents were present on United Flight 175 and Flight 11, respectively, American Airlines Flight 11. The first flight had Danny Lewin, a 28-year-old graduate of Israel's elite commando unit, the world's most elite anti-hijacking team. He was captain of this unit, and the story soon developed that he had been shot by Satam al-Suqami as the four Arabs attempted to storm the cockpit of the plane. Satam was the one whose passport supposedly fluttered down to ground zero where the FBI had found it, untouched and unburnt. Sayet Matkal is Israel's elite team that handles aircraft hijackings and assassinations, specializing in aircraft takeovers. During the 1970s and 80s, the secretive Israeli anti-terrorist unit, akin to our Delta Force, thwarted many attempted hijackings. Members of this unit are trained in looking and thinking like an Arab. Flight UA-175, United Airlines 175, the Boston to L.A., allegedly hijacked to fly into the South Tower, had the Israeli citizen and probable Mossad agent named Alora Avraham. This 27-year-old was raised in an Israeli settlement of Ashdod. One surmises that Lewin may have not died, but had some key role in whatever happened. On the morning of 9/11, a two-hour advance warning to stay out of the towers was received by the Israeli firm Odigo, whose research and development center in Herzliya, Israel, a town north of Tel Aviv, where Mossad is headquartered. This messaging company, with its office a mere two blocks from the former World Trade Center, received a warning originating from the Israeli branch. One never heard details, but Odigo's vice president, Alex Diamantis, said, "The messages said something big was going to happen in a certain amount of time, and it did, almost to the minute." Odigo has a feature called People Finder, which allows a user to send an instant message to a large group based on a common characteristic, such as Israeli nationality. While maintaining user privacy, this is surely the explanation as to why no Israeli nationals working in the towers died that morning. There was one who died, but he was just visiting. Comverse and Odigo have had a long-standing partnership and together have developed instant communication products and services that we have recently begun to offer to operators around the world, declared Ziv Bregman, CEO of Comverse. Zionist neocons and the Straussian Jews, Irving Kristol, godfather of the neocon movement, founded the Project for a New American Century. The Project for the New American Century, his son William Kristol, worked closely with Richard Perle, and this Jewish duo achieved more than anyone else in erasing the concept of détente, which had traditionally been the policy of the Council on Foreign Relations, and in extinguishing any hope of peace dividend following the Soviet Union's collapse. In September of 2000, PNAC produced Rebuilding America's Defenses, which famously called for a permanent war philosophy. Empire, the advancing of the cause of Israel, and the catalyzing event of the new Pearl Harbor to make it all possible. The Kristols used their enormous influence prior to 9/11 to promote the concept of Arabs as potential terrorists. Then after the event, they ensured that the media focused and stayed focused on bin Laden and Muslim guilt. The day before the Iraq war began, Kristol bragged in an editorial of his journal, The Weekly Standard, that, obviously, we are gratified that the Iraq strategy we have long advocated has become the policy of the U.S. government. And a columnist for the Washington Post had once declared the looming conflict to be Kristol's war. The Civilian Defense Policy Board wields more control over the military establishment than the defense secretary or the generals and the admirals. The notoriously belligerent Pearl, nicknamed the Prince of Darkness, was chairman of that board. There are a number of other Zionists who served on that board: Kissinger, Cohen, Schlesinger, as well as non-Jewish members, have always supported Israel and the expansion of the war on terror. By the way, the membership of that Defense Policy Board, Richard Perle, Chairman, American Enterprise Institute, Kenneth Adelman, Newt Gingrich, Henry Kissinger, Dan Quayle, James Woosley, and many more. Apart from the top Jewish neocons, Henry Kissinger and Richard Perle as chairman of the Defense Policy Board, Zionist Paul Wolfowitz as Undersecretary of Defense, and a Zionist Award winner Douglas Feith as Undersecretary of Defense Policy, the Zionist Pentagon gang controlled three of the four top civilian leadership positions of the America's armed forces. Others, such as Condoleezza Rice and Donald Rumsfeld, were fairly in accord with the drive for World War III. The Perle-Wolfowitz-Feith gang represent a fanatical government within a government. And, of course, in the league with the Zionist Pentagon conspirators, Jewish Zionist and 2004 presidential candidate Senator Joseph Lieberman and his rather Gentile partner, in crime Senator John McCain. That's right, I said John McCain. Top members of the Bush administration had very close ties with the Israeli government. Every one of the following kingpins of the Bush administration were also Israeli citizens: Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Perle, Douglas Feith, Undersecretary of Defense, as I said, Michael Chertoff, George Tenet, real name, not Tenet, is Cohen, Elliot Abrams of the National Security Council, Donald Kagan, Richard Haass, Kenneth Adelman, Edward Luttwak, National Security Study Group, Robert Satloff, David Frum, David Wormsner, Steve Goldsmith, and Mark Grossman, Ari Fleischer, press secretary. Concluded Rupert, he said these and other Israeli-connected experts form the core group at the Project for a New American Century. These are Zionist warmongers who adore and obey Israel, and who view America chiefly as Israel's financial sugar daddy and mercenary slave. Their aim is global power for the Jews and profits for the Jewish bankers and the Illuminati-directed oil barons. Former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak well expressed the aim of the enterprise when he said in an interview just days after 9/11, "The whole world has now to start a world war against the enemies of Israel." But World War III was not that easy to start. Soon after, Israeli Prime Minister Ariel, the butcher Sharon, bellowed at his cabinet, "I want to tell you something very clear. Don't worry about American pressure on Israel. We, the Jewish people, control America, and Americans know it." On any reasonable analysis, Dick Cheney, Vice President of America, has to be a pivotal 9/11 perpetrator. As Mike Rupert concluded, he says, "I have absolutely no doubt that on that day of September 11th, Richard Cheney was in full and complete control of a properly functioning and parallel command and communication system. Cheney sat on the board of JINSA, the Jewish Institute for National Security, probably the most important organization in terms of its influence on Bush administration policy formation. Cheney would take leave from JINSA while serving as vice president, where his office was run by aides known to be very, very pro-Israel." We'll take the top of the hour break. I've got about maybe five more minutes to cover here, and then we will bring on our guest today, Peter Neese. We'll do all of that right after this top of the hour break.
It's true.